पुरग्राम व्रजोद्यान क्षेत्रारामाश्रमाकरान खेट खड़वट घोषांश्च ददहुः पत्तनानि च. The demons set fire to the cities, villages, pasturing grounds, cow pens, gardens, agricultural fields, and natural forests. They burnt the hermitages of the saintly persons, the important mines that produced valuable metals, the residential quarters of the agriculturalists, the mountain villages, and the village of cow protectors, the cowherd men. They also burned the government capitals. As we can see here, Hiranyakashipu left no stone unturned, as we say in English. Everything that you could think of and a few things that you cannot think of, he included in his agenda of destruction. Now, one thing immediately strikes me, at least, about this verse, or especially in the translation here. After listing how many other things? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. After listing 11 places that they destroyed, then we hear that they also happen to destroy the government capitals. Why is that? In modern warfare, generally we hear that when an enemy is attacking, the first thing they go for is usually the government capital. The media, especially, airports, any means of communication, transportation, important functions in modern society. That's not the order that is described here. Many different things. Let's take a look at some of the commentaries to know what we're talking about here exactly. Puram, hattadimat. Puram means a place, a city, where you have markets. Gramas tadrahitaha. Grama means a place where you don't have those markets. This little enclave in which we live here, it might be considered grama. At least I don't see any markets here, maybe there are. Salem would be considered a pura. Vrajo gavam vasaha, Srihar Swami tells us. Vraja means a place where cows live, or places where cows go. Vraja also means, as Prabhupada translates here, cow pen. Cow pen or pasturing grounds. So you can see, cows go, they wander. They go all over the place. There's a cow who comes only sometimes where I'm staying. If she would come every day, I would be happy, because then I can feed her. Anyway, they go to the pastures, they go to the here and there. So, that's another thing. Udyana, what does Udyana mean? Udyana. In Mayapur we have Ishodyana. Garden of the Lord. So Udyana means a garden, but particularly here Sri Goswami says Kritranam Vanam, a forest that you create. Just like across the street we have these trees, they're using them to produce what? Pan, right? That's okay. Kritranam Vanam, artificial forest. Kshetram Vrihyadehe. Kshetra means a place where you're growing rice. Rice fields, especially here in South India, you have rice fields. Bengal also, rice fields. In the north, we have wheat fields. Arama. Here, Sri Harsami says, Kritranam Vanam. Exactly the same definition that he gave for Udyana. So it's not clear what the distinction is. For that we have to go to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says, Arama means phala pradhanam vanam, a garden that is growing fruit trees, and that kind of thing. So then we have ashrama. That's very clear. Everybody knows what is an ashrama. Rishinam sthanam or muninam nivasaha. These are two definitions given by Sridhar Swami and by, I think it's Vijaya Bhaj Tirtha. Okay, so then akara. It's like we talk about bhakti ratnakara. The name gives it away. What does akara mean? A mine where you get gold, where you find jewels. Sri Lanka, they have a lot of jewels. So akara. Ratnadinam, he says, for jewels and other such things. Keta, krishi valanam vasaha, the place where the farmers stay, or their agricultural fields as well. Karavata, giridroniashayo brahmaha. Here we have this place is called Shailam because there are so many mountains around. Are there villages in those mountains, do you know? Or nobody lives there? There are some villages in the mountains. So that's called Karavata. And Ghosha. Abhiranam Vasaha, the place where the cowherds live. Ghosha. Just like the famous example, Gangayam Ghoshaha, a village on the bank of the Ganges. So, okay. Pattanam. What does Pattanam mean? Somebody told me this the other day. Pattanam means actually a place that's close to the ocean. Someone in Chennai told me that. Just like we find Nagapattanam, Vishakhapattanam. But that's not what the acharyas say here. Pattanam Rajdhani. It means the capital city, according to Sridhar Swami. And according to Vijayadwaj Tirtha, it means Vanibhir Adhishtitam Pattanam, a place where you find a lot of merchants. A big city, in other words, that's the idea we get here. Okay, now there's one interesting, most of the acharyas all say exactly the same thing, verbatim. It's one of the characteristics of Sanskrit commentaries by Vaishnava acharyas. They all say almost exactly the same thing. Even their Sri Vaishnavas, even their Madhvas, even their Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Vallabhacharya is a little different that we hear in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But here, Vijayadwaj Tirtha says something a little different. Keta. Anybody remember what is a keta? Do you have this word in Tamil? Ket? In Hindi we have keta means a field, where you grow things, agricultural field. But here, Vijayadwaj Tirtha says keta natyasthanam, a place of natya. I don't know how to interpret that. Drama? It doesn't sound very... Anyway, the point here is that they didn't leave anything out. Everything you could think of, they got. They were so thorough in their destruction. And we live in a society that is obsessed with modern technology and cities in general. Anybody who can live in a city will do so. Is it not? We find, just like we have a brain drain, as they say, from the cities of India to the cities of the United States and Europe. So many, especially IT professionals, they're fleeing India. If they possibly can, they'll get out. And just like I find everywhere I go in India, if anybody can possibly avoid speaking his mother tongue, he will. You all probably know better than I do why that is, but it's a curious phenomenon that I find invariably true. Even you try to speak Hindi with them, they won't do it. They want to speak English. So similarly, they want to go to America, and from the granas, and from the ketas, and from the karvatas, they want to go to the pattana. You see? So nobody's staying on the farm. Who's going to take care of feeding everyone in the city? Well, that we have the answer. MIT has the answer. I told you the other day. We produce artificial food, no problem. Then we can develop all the land, everywhere. I was in Mauritius, and like South India, Mauritius is a very heavenly place. It looks like Kerala, from the land, nice hills like you have here. Green everywhere, mango trees, jackfruit trees, coconut trees, forests. Very, very beautiful. And beautiful blue ocean. And no snakes. Anywhere in the country, there are no snakes in Mauritius. So they actually say that first God created Svargaloka, then he created Mauritius. They say like that. But I've noticed within the last decade, only in a few years, it is as if they are mad to pave everything over there. You have paradise, but they're madly paving everything over. Mauritius is a small, small country. It's an island. And it's only the size of Chennai. That's small. And they have such wonderful natural resources. People, they still have some farms left. And people in their yards, like you have here, they grow jackfruit, they grow papita, how do you say papita? Papaya in Tamil, I don't know. They grow all fruit trees. This is also Vishwanath Chakrabarty Thakur. He gives his own definition of vanam. Pushpa pradhanam vrihyadehe. So they're growing not only rice, but they're growing flowers, they're growing fruits, they're growing vegetables, of course. South India, you don't eat so many vegetables. Mostly everything is rice and dal. 1,000 different ways to make rice and dal. They have a joke in the North. Anything you give to a Tamil, he'll turn it into dosha. There's some truth in that. So, so we have so many wonderful natural resources, and particularly in certain places like South India. But just within the last year, I've seen, because I fly from North India to South India, and from the airplane, you can get a perspective that you can't get on the ground. It used to be the whole country is like Marakatamani, emerald green. Now it's looking like more. When I came last year to Tuticendur. It was in the middle of the drought. I told you the story already. So from the plane, I'm looking, and I had serious doubts. Is the pilot, am I on the right plane? Did the pilot make a mistake? Are we going to Rajasthan? Have we been hijacked? Terrorists? Because it just doesn't look like Tamil Nadu anymore. It's not green. You see? Anyway, this is the problem with modern society, and therefore we value, first of all, the deeply paved over cities. Cameras everywhere, wires everywhere, pollution everywhere, crooks everywhere, politicians everywhere, concrete everywhere. So in the modern day and age, these are the valuable things to so-called human beings, because as Prabhupada said, purport after purport after purport in this passage, it is a demoniac civilization. But a natural civilization, a pious civilization, they value the other things that are mentioned here. They value agricultural fields. Why do we call it dhan? Do you have this word in Tamil? Grains? Grains in the field are called dhan. And money is called dhana because it's like that. It's almost as good as grains. In modern society, we think grains are almost as good as money. It's a perverted concept. You see? So they value agricultural fields, they value flowers. In Western countries, you cannot get flowers. Flowers are exceedingly expensive in the United States. Here, flowers are everywhere. It doesn't cost much, except in Vrindavan. Because in Vrindavan, they know. All the NRIs are living there, all the Videshis have come and are living there. And we can charge them anything we want. And they do. but ordinarily flowers don't cost very much here because they're widely available. Why? Because people value flowers. Without flowers, you cannot worship God, you see? So natural society values these other things. Gardens, places for the cows, because cows are also very important. You cannot have religion without cows. Srila Prabhupada said, milk. You call this pal in Tamil. So, milk, Prabhupada said, is liquid dharma. Dharma in liquid form, milk. So, cows, they're the source of liquid dharma. You have to have cows. You have to have farms, you have to have flowers, fruits, etc., etc. These are the really important things. And then Prabhupada continues. He makes a very important point. Why are these things very important? Because these things are dear to Krishna. That's why. They're dear to Krishna. And then he quotes Bhagavad Gita. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tad aham bhakti uparhatam ashnami prayatatmanaha. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. This is Srila Prabhupada's unique contribution to the body of commentary on this verse. None of the predecessor acharyas are quoting this verse. There are some verses like this. Those who know Bhagavad Gita very well will understand which verse chapter 4, text 10 is. Anybody know? Vita raga bhaya krodha. Very, very nice verse. So Srila Prabhupada, in his commentary on that verse, he does not so much paraphrase the comments of the predecessor acharyas. He does, but most of the purport, 80-90% of the purport, is his own original contribution. I'm not going to talk about that because it's another subject matter, but please read that verse. The reason it's important is because it could not have been written at any other moment in time except the modern age. And it could not have been written by any other acharya except for Srila Prabhupada. He gives three reasons why we all don't surrender to Krishna. And you can judge them and you can introspect and consider which category you belong to. Just in a nutshell, I'll summarize. Either we are attached to sense gratification, raga, or we are afraid of spiritual life, bhaya, or we are just frustrated with everything, we've just been overstimulated and information overload. This is a common term in English. We've heard too much from too many people and they're all fighting about it. We don't know what's going on and we just don't want to deal with it. That's called krodha. Not exactly krodha, but frustration. And Prabhupada's purport explains. These are the reasons we don't take Krishna consciousness more seriously than we do. But here we're talking about love. And simple love. How simple? Just a tulsi leaf. The other day we were quoting Vidyapati, who wrote a beautiful song about offering tulsi to the lotus feet of Vishnu, Lord Krishna. And offering flowers. Here you have so many beautiful flowers. Champa, you have, I don't know what you call these things in Tamil. Mogra, so many. Somebody was bringing Juhi the other day. What do you call that in Tamil? So many nice flowers and some fruits. We have aam. They're not ripe yet, but they're here. And I mentioned papayas there and some nice things we can offer to Krishna. Water, pure water. That's the hard one. We destroyed all the water. Kaveri is empty. You know. I saw Tamaraparni a few years ago near Tiruchendur. There the water is still fairly pure. You can still bathe in that water, you can still drink the water. They will try to change that as soon as they can. They're already building nuclear power plants here on the coast, isn't it? Here in Tamil Nadu. And other things also will follow. Anyway, these things are valuable not only because they're sattvic and beautiful in their own right, but they're mainly valuable because Krishna enjoys when we offer these things to him. Krishna doesn't enjoy when we offer alcohol to him. He doesn't enjoy if we go to KFC and buy some snacks for him. He doesn't enjoy those things because he is in Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness, you see? This is his level of enjoyment. And even though these fruits and flowers and grains, etc., of the material world, they don't really come up to standard because they're flawed. I mentioned already, if you try to eat a mango now, it's another such experience. But bhakti is the thing. This is the point. Srila Prabhupada, very important sentence. Listen closely now. Very, very important sentence, perhaps the most important sentence of the whole purport. He says, our only duty is to please the Supreme Godhead, some Siddhir Hare Krishna. Whatever we do, and whatever our occupation, our main purpose should be to please the Supreme Lord. Our problem is that our main purpose is to please ourselves, or, at best, someone else, our families, our employers, the people in general. We try. You cannot please them also. You can never please them. The American politician, Abraham Lincoln, he was the president of America at a time when there was a civil war in America. The northern half of the country was fighting the southern half of the country. And he was in charge of trying to bring everybody together. Something like the GBC is in charge now of trying to sew together a fractious ISKCON. Anyway, he made a very eloquent remark. He said, you can please all of the people sometimes. And you can please some people all the time. But you cannot please all the people all the time. So this is the flaw with trying to serve someone other than Krishna. If we try to serve our family members, what happens? Well, you can do okay for some time, but we already described this the other day. When you get old, you can't keep it all together anymore. And what do? They throw you out. Even here in India now, I'm seeing nursing homes everywhere with abandoned old people suffering like anything. They really suffer in these nursing homes. It's not a good idea. So you cannot please your family, you cannot please your boss. Sometimes he says, you know, we don't really need you anymore. You get your pink slip. So you can't please everyone any more than you can water each and every leaf on the tree. But if you please Krishna, then automatically everyone else will be nourished, even if they're not happy. They will be nourished. Why are they not happy? Because they're demoniac. They've got an agenda other than that of Lord Vishnu. They expect more than is their quota. Isha Upanishad tells us. All this belongs to God. And this is the next point that Prabhupada makes. All the paraphernalia mentioned in this verse is especially meant for the satisfaction of the Lord, not the satisfaction of one's senses. This is something that Srila Prabhupada had deep insights into this truth. This is a very, very important sentence. Let's read it again. All the paraphernalia mentioned in this verse is especially meant for the satisfaction of the Lord. Everything belongs to Krishna, and everything is created only to please Krishna. Why are there fruits? Only because Krishna enjoys eating them when we offer them in love. Why are there flowers? Only to allow us to offer them. Actually, this whole world doesn't really need to exist. It's not the real world at all. Vaikuntha is there. Everything is there in perfection. Absolutely unflawed. Real fruits are there. Real flowers are there. Everything real is there. Real humans are there. Real cows are there. Real conveyances are there. Real music is there. Real food is everything. Whatever you value in life, it actually belongs only in the spiritual world, and we've been given imitations that are they're obsolete by design. We've been given kritrimavanam in this world, artificial forests, artificial flowers, fruits, artificial people, artificial families, artificial occupations, artificial cows, artificial foodstuffs, artificial everything. You see? And the only reason it's here is to give us an opportunity to work out our attitude problem by offering these things in love, selflessly, to the Supreme Lord. And still we don't do that. This is why the 11th canto says, regarding Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Tyaktvasa duschaja surekshita Rajya Lakshmi, talking about Patana, capital. Rajya Lakshmi means the capital of love, his spiritual kingdom. He's given that up. Dharmishta Aryavachasa Yadagad Aranyam. And in accordance with the curse of this Brahman, he's gone to the forest. He's taken sannyas. Nimai. Maya Mrigam Dayeti Apsitaman Vadhavat. He's chasing after those of us who are ourselves chasing after so many toys. Anuvadhavat means he's chasing after us. How would you feel if I gave you the benediction that from today on you're going to be turned into brass statue? Would you like that? It doesn't sound very comfortable, does it? But he's standing here, only for us, in the form of a brass statue. Of course, we understand, because he's been installed by the love of a pure devotee, prema pratishthita. Therefore, he's actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And like all the other artificial things in the world, he's giving us an opportunity to serve him with our fruits, with our flowers, vegetables, grains, everything, our families, our children, everybody. Everything is meant for Krishna. Yet kuroshi, yet ashnashi, yet johoshi, dadasi yat, yet tapasyasi kanteya, tat kurushu marartanam. This is why we say at the end of every yajna, Sri Krishna arpanamastu. This is the spirit. Throughout all the Vedas, we find this consistently is there. So, how do we induce the Lord to eat? This is the thing. The essence is bhakti. We've mentioned already. In Vidura's house, what was he offering Krishna to eat? Duryodhana ko bhoga na khayo, rukha sadha Vidura ghare khayo. Duryodhana could not induce Krishna to eat, even though Duryodhana was offering Krishna 64 items of bhoga. Wonderful feast. And Duryodhana had the means to do that. But Krishna was not interested. Similarly, Vidura, he was poor, but he offered Krishna even some ordinary sadh. And Krishna's eating with great relish. He's very interested. You see? Therefore, Rupa Goswami prays, a beautiful verse in his Padyavali. Vijastrinam bhakte mriduni vidurane jvrajagavam dadhikshire sakhyo sputa chapita mushtao muraripo yashodaya stanye vrajayuvati datte madhunite yathasi ramodas tam inam upahare pikurutam. My dear Lord, Murarepo, enemy of Mura, please be kind and accept my offering in exactly the same way that you accepted the offerings that were given to you by the Yajna Patnis, the wives of the Yajna Brahmins in Vrindavan. I used to live across the street from that place where it happened, near Akurakat. You all know the story. The wives of the Yajna Brahmins, Dijastrinam, Bhakte, Maridani Virudane, Dushagavam, and whatever Vidura was able to give you in his home, we've already described. Vrajagavam chide, in the milk of the cows of Vrindavan. Once I was at Nandagram, I went with the temple president of our Houston, Texas temple. He's Gujarati. And he wanted to give some donation to the Goswami there. So he personally met him. His name was Badri Prasad Goswami. He was worshipping Krishna and Balaram on top of the hill of Nandagram. How many people have been there? Raise your hand. Yes, you know. Two deities, and both of them look exactly alike in every respect. It looks like there are two Krishnas standing next to each other like this. They have the same, everything is, Sankuch is the same. One time I asked a Pujari, why do you dress Krishna and Balaram, but they both look exactly the same, even they're both black. Well, why is that? He shook his head, and he said, I have to give them everything exactly alike, because if I don't do that, then they fight. This is the vision of the Vrijavasis. Pure love, without any Aishwarya Jnan at all. So anyway, we went to see this Pujari, Badri Prasad Goswami, different Pujari. And he was so happy to receive a donation for his temple that he invited us into his home to take prasadam, breakfast. And what did he give us? He gave us fresh milk straight from the udder of his cow. Hot milk. Because milk has to be taken hot, according to Ayurveda. And his wife made hot ki roti, braj ki roti, chapati, that they don't roll them, they only they use their hand. You see? So she gave us hot ki roti with makhan, butter from the cows. What do you call it? Venna? Venna. And this makhan roti and nice achar and hot milk. And big laddu, this big, from prasadam from Krishna and Balaram. And the Houston temple president was taking this prasadam with such intense relish that when he finished, he could not stop. And he shamelessly asked the Pujari's wife, Mataji, can you please give us more? So it's a great benediction to get milk from the cows of Braja. Special, special thing. It's considered to be a blessing from Krishna if you get that milk. So Krishna, you can understand how much he enjoys this milk. So, Vrajagavam Kshire. Kshire. So, the Dvijastrinam Bhakte Maradami Vrurane Vrajagavam the Kshire Sakhyu Husputit Chipita Moshtao. And in the hand of his friend, there was this flat rice. Not chipped rice, not even flat rice. Very cheap, very ordinary, not so valuable. But because it was in the clenched fist of his friend, Sudama, Dwarkadish, Maharaja Dhiraja, he wanted to have that thing only. Rukmini was astonished. I've never seen him do this before. Krishna eats even better than Duryodhana in Dwarka. But this time he only wanted that thing. Even she tried to talk him out of it, he's not going to budge. He wants that thing, you see? Very eager. Kshire Sakyu, the Kshire Sakyu Spotichipa Namoshtao Murarepo Yashodaya Stanye, the breast milk of Mother Yashoda. Nobody can surpass that. That's even better than the cow's milk in Vrajatana. Yashoda. Ankadirudham Shishukopa Gurham Stanam Thayantam Kamalaika Kantam Sambodhayam Asamudaya Shoda Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. The one and only Lord, Perumal. He is the Supreme Mahavishnu that everyone worships. Lord of Lakshmi, Kamalaika Kanta. He is sitting in a disguised form on the lap of Mother Yashoda, and he's drinking milk from her breast. You see? And what is she saying? She's saying, Govinda Dhamma. She's calling him Govinda Damodar Madhava. Recently, when we had the Shravanam Kirtanam camp in Sri Rangam, after I left, I was in the airport taking my flight back to Delhi. Delhi se hokar Vrindavan. And there was one young Tamil woman, security guard, and she was looking at me with a very stern face. And she asked me all of a sudden, what's in the bag? So normally, when I'm in Hindi-speaking areas, I will tell them, is Telene Thakurji Sogani, because I carry the deity with me wherever I go. So I didn't know enough Tamil, so I just told her, Chinna Perumal. At one time, she was astonished and elevated and delighted all at once. And she said, okay. So this same Chinna Perumal, he's sitting on the lap of Mother Yashoda, like an ordinary cowherd's baby. She should go to Gopagurham. And he's drinking her breast milk. So nothing can surpass that. Yashodaya Stanye. But Vraja Yuvati that they madhunite, the sweets that are offered to you by these young gopis, that can surpass even the milk of Mother Yashoda. You see? So Rupa Goswami prays, may you please accept my offering with just as much enthusiasm as you accepted all these offerings of your pure devotees, even though I'm rascal number one. Srila Prabhupada said, if you pray to Krishna like this, then Krishna will eat. Otherwise, if you just put it in front of him and thinking about something else, then he's going to look at it and also think about something else. If you're not really interested in him, he's also not really interested in you. It's just like, I mean, even on Facebook, you have the right that if you don't want to be friends with someone, you can just push the button that says later. At least they used to have a button like that. You don't have to accept the person as your friend, and Krishna doesn't have to accept you as your friend. But if you approach him as a friend, then he reciprocates as a friend. If you approach him as a parent, want to take care of him, then he will reciprocate as a beautiful child. And he never grows up and moves away and never calls you, or sends you to a nursing home, or goes to America and doesn't send you anything. He doesn't do like that. You see? If you worship him as the supreme lover, then you have the most intense relationship possible. This is what's given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This very, very elevated rasa, madhuri rasa. So we don't know, what does it mean when he says, Vraja yuvati tatte madhunite? What kind of sweets were the gopis given? It's ambiguous, isn't it? You see? Anyway, these things will be revealed when we make advancements. For now, we have to focus on our guru nishtha, developing guru nishtha. But this is the point. If we pray for Krishna to accept our offering, then he will take interest. He will accept. Ashnami, he says. Bhaktya, if it's offered with bhakti. Now, this is also explained, again, by Rupa Goswami, again, in the same Padyabhik. He's this time taking the verse written by Srila Ramananda Rai, believe it or not. Nanopachara krita pujana martha bandho prema eva bhakta hrayam subha vidrutam syat yavat shir asvita hare jarha pipasa tavat sukhaya bhavatu nanu bhakshyate ye. He says, however many varieties of articles you offer, the Lord will develop an interest in those things, commensurate to the degree of intensity of your desire that the Lord will accept my offering. To that degree, the Lord's hunger intensifies. The more you want him to eat, the more hungry he becomes. This is the wonder of bhakti. It's not limited by any physical considerations. There are stories, in Braj literature at least, a devotee is cooking in the kitchen, making makhan roti, because in Vrindavan, Krishna and Balaram, this is what they ask for. Do you know this? They want makhan roti. Not only because that is the food, but particularly that's the grown-up's food. In Mangalarti, before Mangalarti, what do we offer to the deity? Milk sweets. Only soft, chewy milk sweets, milk, nice sweets. Because this is baby food. Babies eat this. You see? Therefore, that offering is called Balya Bhoga. Balya Bhoga. And then you have Mangalarti because after eating this nice sweets, he's happy. And he's giving blessings to everybody who comes. You see? Actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says this. There's a ninth verse, Palashruti, for the Gurvashtakam. He says, Srimad Guru Rashtakameta Utche Brahmi Muhurte Padhati Prayatnat Yes Tena Vrindavan Natha Sakshat Sevaiva Lakhijana Shondeva. He said, if somebody makes the effort to come to Mangalarti and sing loudly for the deity's pleasure, then that person is assured a position of direct service to Vrindavananatha in the spiritual world. You see? This is the benediction. So when we come to Mangalarti, it's called Mangalarti because he's in a good mood. He's auspicious and he's going to dispense benedictions upon us. So, but Krishna and Balaram, they don't like this only. They like to eat makhan roti because then it makes them feel more important. Because now, and they also like to go out and take care of the cows. They would do it if Mother Yashoda let them, but she won't let them. So she at least lets them take care of the calves, govatsa. Then they feel at least they're on the way. This is Gopashtami, when we celebrate the holiday of Gopashtami. Okay, so the point is that when we offer anything, whether it's milk sweets or it's roti, or here you have dosa, idli, sambar, etc., if we want Krishna to eat and we pray sincerely for Krishna to eat, then he's hungry. Then he'll eat. Zarur he'll eat. But we have to be pure Vaishnavas. We have to be pure. We have to be following everything and praying very carefully. Okay, so that's another point. Now, Srila Prabhupada concludes, the government, indeed the entire society, should be structured in such a way that everyone can be trained to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the real defining characteristic of South Asian civilization since time immemorial. The famous musician, Pandit Ravi Shankar, not this art of living rascal, but the famous musician, sitar player, he came to visit Srila Prabhupada in 1976. My godbrother Satya Narayana was there, he told me about this. Anyway, he was favorable in his own way, and he was observing that the characteristic, defining characteristic of Indian culture is that it is pervaded by a very, very profound sense of innate humility. Humility. And Srila Prabhupada has stated the same thing here that I'm stating actually, that the ultimate manifestation of this humility is that we are constantly absorbed in Krishna consciousness, not consciousness of other things. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami writes that actually, if we have to define what is prema, what is pure love of Godhead in transcendental ecstasy, He said the definition of prema is, anybody know? Pure, unconditional humility. He said that is not different from prema. Prema is not different from unconditional absolute humility, and unconditional absolute humility is not different from prema. These two things are synonymous. They're one and the same thing. So Srila Prabhupada is giving us a hint here, a picture of what the purpose of a real human society is. It should be pervaded by a consciousness of servitude to Lord Krishna. And previously we can see every social institution in South Asia, within Hinduism at least, was so constructed that one will remember God. We mentioned the other day, now they're trying to push that out the window as fast as they can. And they're naming places Hilltown, Flower Valley, 11 Flowers Restaurant, because they've lost the sight of the purpose of a human life. Some Siddhir Hari Poshan. Why have they lost the sight? Because they've lost the humility. In order to see that everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure, you have to admit that I'm not the supreme enjoyer, and they don't want to do that. So, I don't want to dilate too much on the demons. I'm actually getting tired of it because Prabhupada has been pushing on this point again and again and again. But it's necessary. It's necessary. As we mentioned yesterday, you have to hear these things again and again and again. Otherwise, we won't know how important they are. So it's unfortunate. Prabhupada concludes on this note with regard to demons again, because they're never far from his mind, actually. Srila Prabhupada is, well, there's a very beautiful verse that we sing. Hey Shri Guru Gyana Dadina Bandho Swananda Data Karaneka Sindho Vrindavanasina Hitagatara Prasiradha Pranaya Pratara. Beautiful verse. He says, he's praying, my dear spiritual master, dispenser of divine wisdom, friend of the fallen, Hey Shri Guru Gyana Dadina Bandho Swananda Data, the person who shares with everyone else what is your own internal ecstasy. Karunaika Sindho, unique ocean of transcendental mercy. Incomparable ocean. There's only one of them. It's him. You see? Karunaika Sindho. Vrindavanasina, although sitting in Vrindavan, Hitavatara, you have descended to this level. Prasiradha Pranaya Prachara. Only to preach what is that real love, the love that Srimati Radharani feels, only to give that thing to all of us who've come. Such a nice prayer. So Srila Prabhupada is always thinking of the poor people who are bereft of this Krishna consciousness because they're so wrapped up in their karma and all their anarthas. So he says, unfortunately, in this age especially, they don't know that their real self-interest is actually Vishnu, devotional service. They don't see. They can't connect the dots. To put it all together and conclude that actually I'm not actually trying to enjoy this material world because my real happiness is somewhere else. They're mistaken by so many illusory conceptions. When we persevere in Krishna consciousness, and if we follow the instructions of Karunaika Sindhu very carefully, then after some time, depending on the intensity of our desires we've already discussed, we begin to get some deep insights into the truth of these matters. And we begin to see in our own personal application of Krishna consciousness how we ourselves have been absorbed in an illusion. That's called the mercy of the spiritual master. We see that sense gratification is not what I want, actually. We see it clearly. But it only comes through mercy. So, on the contrary, Prabhupada says, like demons, people in the modern age simply plan to kill Vishnu and be happy by sense gratification because they're absorbed in such thick ignorance. Very dense ignorance. So, these are a few things we can think about. It's especially pleasing purport. Krishna is pleased only by simple things. because the real thing he wants is your bhakti. We were mentioning this in Chennai the other night. I don't know if I mentioned it here or not, but every one of us has a unique relationship with Krishna. Every one of us has a unique rasa that only we can provide Krishna. He cannot get that from anybody else, only from you. Think about it. What are the ramifications? That means, and we know that he's eager enough for that taste that he'll chase us down, come into this material world to try to chase after us and bring us back. He's ready to become a brass statue, unlike us, in order to reclaim us. And he's standing right in front of us right now. Today is the anniversary of Balaram's Rasleela. If we read in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, then we know Balaram, this is very confidential pastime, but Balaram has his own group of gopis with whom he enjoys in Vrindavan sometimes. And today is the day on which he enjoyed pastimes with those highly qualified, pure devotees. So Balaram comes in the modern age as Nitai, and he's come into Sema in the form of Nitai as well. I don't know about everyone else's experience, I can't say, but it looks to me as if Nitai is the prominent one on our altar here. Just like in Vrindavan, your eyes naturally go to Balaram. At least mine do. There's one boy, he's from a Chennai family, Ayers, in Silicon Valley, California. So he's a great devotee of Balaram. Anytime you try to glorify Krishna, he always raises his hand and reminds you, well, Balaram also. And he's been like this ever since he was three. He's now maybe 7 or 8 or 9, and he's not growing out of it. So I don't know who he is. But Bhagavatam says some really, really nice devotees appear in this place. Tamil Dravira Desh. So anyway, this is all the mercy of Balaram, and Balaram is accessible to us as Nitai. Balaram Oilo Nitai, Narottam Das Thakur says. And Nitai is also available to us in the form of his expansion, which is the bona fide spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, and anyone who actually represents him purely. You see? So we have only to take shelter of the lotus feet of our spiritual master. We've already described him as a unique, incomparable ocean of mercy. And we can, how much can you drink an ocean? How much mercy can you take? Kripa Bindu Diya. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, even one drop is enough. So take it very seriously. Be eager for this. And you cannot imagine how much mercy will come your way. But you will experience it. Because it is a matter of experience. Yaswanu bhavam akhila shruti sadam ekam. Bhagavatam prays to the speaker of the Bhagavatam, glorifying him. He is only sharing the essence of his own personal experience with us. You see? Shruti mantra, that is the unauthored Apaurusheya Vedas and Upanishads. But the smritis, and Srimad Bhagavatam is technically a smriti, this is a matter of the experience of great personalities. The Vyasdev, for example, literary incarnation of God. So he's sharing with us this. It's personal experiences of Sukha Swami. And these things will become our own personal experience as well as soon as we decide that we want to experience them. You see? So that's all it takes. In the beginning, we have a little bit of difficulty with the bhakti path. We have to be tolerant, we have to be patient, we have to be determined, we have to be faithful, we have to follow strictly, avoid bad association, keep good behavior. These 6 things that Goswami advises. But if we do that, and if we're intense, tivra, then we push through this stage of anartha infinity very quickly. And at that point, there's no more obstruction. At that point, your progress is like, they say in America, an English expression, greased lightning. You can imagine, lightning is very quick, So, and, you know, grease lightning, it's going to slide even more quickly. So, this is the idea here. Srila Prabhupada has been very kind to us, and Lord Nityananda, Lord Balaram, Krishna, they've been very kind to us. We should take advantage of that mercy. Today is also the, did you say disappearance?
Appearance.
Of Shyamananda Pandit. He was a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was such a great devotee that he was sweeping the courtyard near Sevakunj, where he knew that Krishna must be having his pastimes because it's Sevakunj. So he thought, let me do some seva for Sevakunj. And one day he found a gold Nupur bracelet. Who wears gold bracelets on their anklets, on their feet? Who wears them? Raise your hand if you know someone who wears a gold. No, because we all wear silver only, correct? Gold is reserved only for goddesses. Maybe sometimes great Maharanis also, they can do it. Ordinary people, nowadays they're doing it because they're puffed up. But actually it's only meant for goddesses. Anyway, he found this. And then he thought, certainly whoever owns this is going to come looking for it, because it's not every day you find gold. So he kept it. And sure enough, within a few days, a little girl came and said, Baba, my friend lost her anklet, and she asked me to come and get it back for her. Can you please give it to me? And he, Shyamananda, said, no. She has to come herself and get it. I don't know who you are. So she sent her friend, and her friend came, and her friend was very happy. She said, I'm so happy that you found this. And she pushed this anklet on his forehead, and she said, from now on, you should be known as Shyamananda. Before, his name was, who knows, Dukhi Krishnadas. And he was from East India, but he was living in Vrindavan. So then, from that point on, he had permanent tilak on his forehead. So you can imagine what might happen. Let's say that, let's say Chitta Hari comes to the Bhagavatam class tomorrow morning and he's got some funny tilak on. Certainly, Gokula Chandra is going to say something to him. Correct? So all the devotees in Vrindavan, they were thinking, what is this? What's going on here? You know, have you been associating with the Babaji's at Radhakund? What's happening? So then he says, no, and he told them the whole story. And everybody was astonished. Everyone was astonished. So they gave him his space, so to speak. And his Samadhi Mandir is still there in Vrindavan. And the place where Srimati Radharani revealed herself to him is also still there in Vrindavan. Across the street is one of the famous seven Goswami temples of Vrindavan, established by Shyamananda Pandit, Radha Shyam Sundar. One of the best kept temples in Vrindavan. Very first class seva they do there. Mostly those devotees are from Orissa, like he was. And he had his disciple, Vasikananda Thakur, and they preached in Orissa. Whatever Gaudiya Vaishnava teaching is in Orissa, it's coming mostly because of their efforts. Second generation Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So today is his appearance day. Also, Vamshi Vadan Thakur, no? The appearance or disappearance? Appearance. Vamshi Vadan Thakur, as his name would indicate, he was actually considered to be an incarnation of Krishna's flute. Sometimes they say that this Shri Kol, the clay mridanga that we play, is also Krishna's flute. But I've not read that in Prabhupada's books. But we know that Vamshi Vadan Thakur is an incarnation of Krishna's flute. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, somebody had to take care of his family. They're just Mata, Shachi Mata, and Vishnupriya Devi were the only ones there. So they had two servants. One was Ishan, and the other one was Vamshi Vadan Thakur. And after Shachi Mata and Vishnupriya left this world, he outlived them, and he kept their deity, and he established that deity in Koladweep, in Navadweep, near Mayapur. Dhameshwar Mahaprabhu, famous temple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So his Samadhi Mandir is also in Vrindavan. There, he's one of the Chonsant, 64 Mahants of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Parampara, Vamshivalan Thakur. 64 Mahantas. In Vrindavan near the Govinda Ji temple, there's famous, beautiful garden with also many Samadhi Mandirs. These famous among them are these 64 Mahants, and Vamshivalan Thakur has his Samadhi there. You can go to these places, you can pray to them, and they will give you so much mercy. Even they're available through their Samadhi Mandir also. Okay, so we'll stop here, it's getting late. But if anybody, and characteristically, has a question, we can ask and answer the question. Okay. Gaur Bhagavan.
You're talking about Mauritius, how we see that same thing happening from Mayapur. It was 10 years back, nice green, and now there's so much development going on.
Yeah.
So, how can this happen? I mean, is it justified, the development, or are we going to the wrong path?
One thing I can say for sure, that we know that there are different offenses. Dham aparatha is one kind of offense. And one thing that is very clearly stated is that it's an offense to calculate property dealings, buying and selling land in the dham. Of course, at the same time, people need places to live. They want to take shelter in the dham. In that regard, we can think about the kinds of places that the six Goswamis inhabited when they came to take shelter of the dham, and compare them to the kinds of places that we built when we take shelter of the dham. That's one consideration. But another thing is, to do business in the dham is actually an offense, and there is a lot of commerce going on in the dham. I'm not going to point fingers at anybody specifically, but these kinds of things are not encouraged by our acharyas. So we have to be careful. As I said, at the same time, people do need a place to stay. Srila Prabhupada built the Krishna Balaram guest house in Vrindavan, which in 1975 was actually comparable to a 5-star hotel. Now, if you look at it, it seems comparatively simple, because it is comparatively simple. There are so many other 5-star hotels everywhere. About 15 years ago, one of my godbrothers said he had a nightmare in which ISKCON had built a huge high-rise condominium at Govardhan. At that time, I was living at Govardhan and there was nothing there. But now, you've got that. But I have to say with some degree of pride that ISKCON is not the ones who are building it. It's the land mafia. And there's also a golf course at Govardhan, believe it or not. Radharani Golf Course. It's adjacent to the Radharani, you know, whatever the high-rise towers are. These things are not appropriate. They should not go on. And it's only because of greed that people indulge in these things. So, does that answer your question?
Is it true that Prabhupada envisioned that Mayapur should be a self-sustaining?
Yeah, definitely that's true. Prabhupada definitely was encouraging only that. Actually, one time, well, anyone who's gone to Mayapur, you know, as soon as you come in the front gate, the first thing you see on your left is Srila Prabhupada's Bhajan Kuti. What is it made out of? Thatch. Not like the houses we're building here, like the houses across the street. Prabhupada was living in that kind of house, and he was sitting in that house one day, and he was saying, he pointed at this huge, passionate construction project going on. And he said, actually that building is Rajasic. He said this. And it's true, actually. He said, but we have to build these big temples. Because if we just stay in a thatch hut in Mayapur, nobody will come. Nobody will come, you see? And in the same way, you know, people who are accustomed to that lifestyle, the people who are ruining the world, the people who need the mercy of the Tham more than anybody else, they have to be accommodated. So Prabhupada built that Krishna Balaram guest house in that spirit. Evidently it wasn't enough for some people, because then, you know, they built an MBT, and after that so many others, imitations, homegrown imitations. But it probably would have happened anyway, I think. You know. But one reason it would have happened anyway is because 30 years ago, ISKCON didn't really get on it and start investing in self-sustainable agricultural villages the way that Prabhupada actually wanted. That's an important point as well. Had we been taking these instructions more seriously back then, maybe Indians would have seen a better alternative. Some Indians are looking for a positive alternative now, sustainable villages, environmentally friendly, you know, endeavors, but not enough of them. Is that okay? Alright, anything else? Yes?
We are seeing in India, with the corporate culture and all those things happening, we see, the more people they are going to the offices, the culture was there, they used to put tilak or even vibhuti.
They don't do it. ICICI, I'm going to interrupt your question, bookmark it and resume later. A few years ago, I stayed in Krom Phet in the house of one devotee there. What's his name? I forget now. He wasn't initiated then. So he was ICICI Bank president, and we were talking one day. So he told me that actually this corporation, he wasn't in charge, he was just a bank president. He told me that this corporation has a policy: you cannot keep a picture of Petamal even as a screensaver. You cannot even, no religious Kuchnahi, you cannot keep anything. And, you know, no incense, no Lakshmi Ganapati, nothing. You see? That's the corporate culture that is being created here. Demoniac. Now, your question is?
Exactly, that's the thing. So, they do, you know, kind of social service and so many things they do, but they completely deny it.
Everything except for God.
Yeah.
Just like Hiranyakashipu. He'll do anything except Vishnu. It's demoniac.
But they appear like very peaceful and then very friendly, but they're totally...
No, you take away their sense gratification and see what happens. They immediately turn into vicious animals. And I hate to add that if you take away our sense gratification, we also resemble vicious animals. That's why we have to build the big houses that are very comfortable. Because actually we're attached. Raga. Bhaya. If somebody proposes doing something other than that, then we become afraid. Oh, what's going to happen? You see? And krota means, you know, we've heard the pros and we've heard the cons and we're just thoroughly confused and I just don't want to deal with it. You see? That purport is very, very deep. 4:10. Chapter 4, text 10. Bhagavad Gita. And you see, within that purport, Srila Prabhupada is repeating the same points many, many times within the same purport, because he's really trying to make sure that we get the point. You see? All the problems of human society are coming from these three things. We are attached to something illusory, we're afraid of something real, and we're just angry as a result of all the confusion. Okay, does that help? They look to be very peaceful people, but as soon as you take away their sense of gratification, they show their real colors. So you look at the world's leaders now. You know, they're just about ready to throw nuclear weapons at one another. It's getting really close. It's pretty unprecedented, at least in my lifetime. You know? It's not really much different than World War II, which is why we can call it World War III, but World War III is a proxy war. We're fighting the other person through the shield of somebody else. Instead of fighting Russia, America's fighting Syria. You see? So, you know, who knows what will happen. But What's for sure is that unless we give Krishna consciousness to other people, it's just going to get worse. Because you only get more of whatever you tolerate. You want more of this, and it will get worse. Just do nothing. Just tolerate it, and you'll have to tolerate a lot worse in the near future. Very near future. Prabhupada said this, but we didn't believe it. Now we're seeing it.
And one more thing in the corporate culture, they go by the philosophy, you know, like just do good to others, but they just, you know, say that this religion and, you know, following codes of conduct and other things, they just put it in a bracket, they say it's all dogma. Just be nice to others from your heart, you'll be good to others. These are the creatures.
India is worse than America in this regard. Indians are much more, they're persecuting dharma much more in India than they do in the West. You want an example? Practical. This ICICI I told you about, that's the standard here. But he doesn't know, whoever's in charge of ICICI, doesn't realize that all these Tamil Iyers whom I was preaching to 15 years ago in Seattle, Washington, at Microsoft, they come to work with their tilak, their japmala, they're wearing saris, no problem. Americans, you know, you do your job, whatever you do is fine with me, just get your job done. You see? That's the corporate culture there. So what is the concept that twists someone twists the intelligence in such a way that he thinks he has to persecute religion? The only answer that I can find to this question is that these people are the transcendentally accredited agents of Kali Yuga decadence. I don't know how to put that in Tamil. They have been divinely empowered to spread the Kali Yuga nonsense. That's the only thing that makes sense. They don't even know what they're doing. Just like yesterday we read. They don't realize that by being envious and not doing something about their innate envy, they're going to harm other people automatically. You cannot but do that. You see? So therefore we preach. But, you know, books going out is good. It should not stop, it should increase. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, in the last 2 or 3 years of his physical presence, he was pushing and pushing and pushing on us to double book distribution every single year. Nobody's pushing us like that anymore. But it should be so. If we do like that, then we can see a change. But the change that we see will be that people come to us, and when they come to us, we better not burn them out. We have to be proper examples, which means we have to have this Varnashram culture in place, and we have to be fully internally Krishna conscious so as to not exploit that culture as well. So example is better than precept. He said, Janmasar Thakari. You cannot serve someone else until you become in a position to actually do something for someone else. Otherwise, the so-called doing good for others, Prabhupada said, it's like blowing air on a boil. You've got a boil, it has to be lanced. There's no easy way to do it. You can't put an ice cube on it and think it's going to go away. It won't. So people who are materialists, they don't have this wisdom because they really don't want this wisdom. They would rather have their dream. That's really what it comes down to. So, you purify their hearts, you engage them, you give them prasadam, you see? And, you know, if they don't want to be preached to, because corporate culture means urban culture. There's no such thing as corporate culture in a village. You know, these people, they're spiritually retarded. It's not retarded, it's actually cancer. They're carcinogenic people, toxic people, and they can only harm others, and they can only cause disruption in the social body. And therefore they're not submissive to good instruction. If you try to give milk and bananas to a snake, what happens? The visha is increased. So the best thing is find an ingenious way to engage them. Just like America. There can be no successful temple in America unless there's a restaurant right next to the temple. Because people will come to a restaurant, but they won't go to the temple. It's getting too late. Otherwise, I could dilate on that point. Gokula Chandra wants to say.
We've seen two types of preaching in India. One is that you encourage people to go on in their career and make good business and chant Hare Krishna, and another one is to really give up and go to the village. And apparently, the first one makes more devotees because of less commitment.
Well, yes, it's more comfortable.
Yeah, but is that really what Prabhupada wanted us to do? Or?
Well, here's the thing. Both things have their place. Both approaches are necessary. But I don't see very much of the other one. Who's doing it? There's another saying in English. Nobody wants to live on the farm once they've seen Paris. You see? Obviously, there's a, you know, it's like a kalpa viksha for sense gratification. The only thing close to it is the internet. And that also they're trying to infiltrate into all the villages. Because these people are smart. Just like in Hiranyakashipu. When I was in Seattle 15 or so years ago, one of the devotees there, he told me that at work we had one of these corporate, you know, team meetings, and you know, where they try to get all the devotees enthused, get all the employees enthused, no? So he said, this person who was speaking, he told us that you should not consider that you've done your duty until there's a Microsoft product in every room of every house. Not only every house, every room in every house. That's how greedy they are. So they've got their brains working 24 hours a day to figure out how to stop this agriculture, how to get rid of the cows, how to get Vishnu out of the picture and exploit those people. That's called Bhuta Droha, we heard yesterday from the Jaitwaj Tirtha. Envy. It's pure envy. And people only fall for it because they actually want sense gratification. Otherwise, it's not very hard to figure it out. Anybody can figure it out if they're sincere on it. Okay, we've got to stop now. It's too late. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavinoda ki jai.